And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, live from an undisclosed quarantine location, where I am thrilled to be joined by my old boss and colleague and the CEO of the Bill Simmons Media Company, Bill Simmons. How are you?
Wow. We're doing this. I can see you on Zoom.
It's unbelievable.
I usually have some sort of terrible facial hair thing going. You actually have a beard thing going. You look a little like, I'm trying to think what NBA player. It's kind of in the Marco Bellinelli kind of phylum, okay. But I feel like there's another player, like maybe a little, that 1 year Peja Stojaković grew a beard. I don't know. You're somehow looking like in that Croatian Serbian kind of vortex, even though you married into that. You're not even, that's not even your nationality. I don't know how you pulled it off.
I'm very excited that you did. Anything that's, if you had said Paul Pierce, I would have probably had to end the podcast immediately. but I'm glad that I can grow it everywhere. I don't have any empty spots, but this is the longest I've gone without shaving since college, probably. So I'm letting it go.
It's strong. It's a strong look. I think you should keep it.
I would say it's not popular in the low household. I think it's universally unpopular other than me in the low household. My daughter
and
thinks
with
it's
me.
Too, oh, all right, that's fine. My daughter thinks it's too sharp and my wife just thinks it's disgusting. So it's not working out. How are you in California? Everything good?
Yeah. LA is kind of in a lot of ways weirdly built for situations like this, because everybody is just in their cars or in their office or wherever they live, and there's not, you know, even 1/100th of the human contact you have in New York. You know, where in New York you're just see hundreds of people when you go 10 minutes, and in LA you're mostly in your cars. The strangest thing has been the traffic, which is just now non-existent, and then the air and the like sight lines are so much better, and it makes you just realize how many cars are just in LA just polluting everything. So it definitely feels different, but it also feels the same.
It's nice to see some, you know, I mean, this is going to be a horrible situation. It's nice that the air is better. I guess it's pretty bad. It's pretty scary, but I'm glad everyone's hanging in. You guys are deep into the redraftables, which I can't believe you didn't find that name until a Twitter user alerted you to it. You
definitely
are
off my game. Yeah, we did 90. We're putting up 99 at the end of this week. But, you know, it just stuff doesn't change. People have gotten the NBA draft wrong for the entire time we've had the NBA. There's no science to it. Nobody can figure it out. There's no rhyme or reason. I announced two of those drafts, and I look back, we were wrong on so many different things just in those two drafts. We'll never figure it out. We'll never crack it, Zach.
Well, you and I'm not going to say what year, but we're going to do two of them, I think, in the next couple of weeks. One has been a dream project of mine that we talked about dating as far back as Grantland, doing some sort of anniversary of a particular draft. So I'm very excited about that. And I have to say, as someone, we're all sort of, we have more time now. The Ringer TV bracket, I have so many thoughts. It's been entertaining to me from start to finish. I think it's a great project. It's just, you guys are the masters at these sort of, like, it's fun. It's like good. It's just good fun and well-written fun. It's just great.
Well, you know, the DNA was laid at Grantland, where you're wearing the hoodie right now.
That's right.
We always try to figure out, all right, if there's a week where there's no content or just like kind of a dead week, how do we make that week fun? So, you know, even dating back to like 2012, 13, we were always trying to think ahead to, all right, well, this 2 week stretch in August is going to suck. We should do a theme week here. We should have a giant oral history or whatever. Now we're in this situation where there's just no content at all. So in a weird way, we were kind of built to think about weird gimmicks and weird things to do. But I also feel like after about 3 months, we're all just going to run out of, it's just, I think it's going to really peter out in a lot of different ways. It still feels a little fresh. It's fun to watch the old games, even though it sucks not to have sports. We all have so much more spare time to watch movies, TV, all that stuff. But if we hit June and it really is starting to look like none of these sports are coming back this year, I think it's going to get really dark. And I think we're in real trouble now with the NBA. And I've been saying this for 3 weeks. I just didn't see a path for the regular season to come back. And if they did the playoffs, they would have to really condense it or do whatever. But man, now it's April 3rd. Life isn't any different than it was 3 weeks ago. Life's not going to be any different 3 weeks from now. And at some point we have to start, embracing the reality that basketball is just not going to come back. And I really don't think it is.
Well, on the very first podcast I did when this happened with Howard Beck, which I think 2 days after the shutdown, I said, and it got aggregated, even though it was just my opinion, that I'm just personally skeptical that we're going to have a season and we're going to have a champion. And I really hope I'm wrong. I think the regular season is obviously essentially over. The idea that we're going to have fans is over. The only hope left is this sort of like Vegas, Bahamas, whatever quarantine situation. And I think that is like everybody wants that, right? And when you put the 30 owners together and they really want something, they tend to be able to get it. I know the league is worried about, can we sell players on this, right? LeBron has already kind of scoffed at the whole notion of it, but you know, they are going to get to a point, I think, where that's going to be the only way, if they can even pull that off, because you're talking about staffs. And I also know, you think about how many people have to be there. It's not just the players that need to get tested every single day. It's a whole support infrastructure, by the way, including medical personnel. And I know that there are people around the league who are like, I know everyone's excited to have sports back, or the idea that sports could come back, but we do have to think about, is there going to be a perception of, well, A, they're being reckless, and B, why should we have X amount of doctors and nurses stationed at the Mandalay Bay or wherever this would theoretically happen for essentially for a non-essential event? So I think it's very complicated. I've been skeptical from the beginning, and I've also been saying like, next season is not going to be normal. Whatever next season looks like is not going to be normal. I don't think anything's going to be normal until there's a vaccine. Like, who wants to go to an NBA game next season? Everyone's disposable income is going down to zero, and you want to go sit in an arena like with other people around after all this? Like, I don't, what is an NBA game going to look like next January?
I had Joe Buck on my podcast this week. We were talking about it because, you know, baseball, unlike the NBA, the NBA can still figure out some sort of condensed playoff thing. Baseball hasn't even started their season. So the only way that works is if they have like 2.5 months of a regular season, then a quickie playoffs. And I'm with you. There's no scenario where I'm going to hang out in a crowd, you know, and they could say, no, it's better. We flatten the curve. It's like, well, great. Do we have a vaccine yet? No. Okay. I guess what I'm not doing, sitting in a section with 100 other people, like you're at a game and the person behind you coughs a couple times. What's your reaction going to be? No, nobody's doing this. So I'm with you. I think if the NBA was going to do a playoff, I think it wouldn't be 16 teams. Maybe you do 4, and maybe you have 2 3-game series and you do it that way. I thought it was really interesting that LeBron has kind of planted his flag on this is a bad idea, because, you know, I think for one thing, he's a traditionalist, and if they have a playoffs, he'd want to do a certain way.
I respect where he's coming from. Like, I get where he's coming from.
Yeah, but he's also smart, because it's a competitive disadvantage for him. I think for the older guys to just start the thing up again like that, and all of a sudden now it's like a best of 3, that's going to favor the younger players. That's going to favor the guys age 21 to 27. The older guys, they're going to need more time to get in shape. I think that there's some lessons from the 99 season, that how weird that season was, and how older guys broke down, and the teams that ended up really thriving and making the finals were teams built around younger guys. You know, the Knicks had Sprewell, Houston, and Camby. That was basically like their nucleus. And the Spurs had the flukiest Duncan Robinson, just an incredible. They have 2 number 1 overall lottery picks from the previous 12 years. Duncan, at his young apex, he could have played, you know, 100 games in a row, and they end up winning the title. So I'm guessing like an older guy like LeBron is looking at like, oh, we're going to have to play 16 playoff games in 25 days. Like that's going to, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that at a high level. I'm with you. I don't think the season comes back. It really bums me out, but unless we see a dramatic change in all the stuff that's going on, I don't see it.
I mean, look, I'm not confident, as I said before, I'm not confident in that outcome, but I'm just saying if you gave me six or seven different outcomes and said, which one are you putting your money on? I'm putting my money on the 2020 NBA champion is vacant. I don't feel like confident. I don't think that's a 50-50 bet, but that's just what I'm putting my money on. By the way, you just said the words Duncan Robinson. How did the Spurs not just pick up Duncan Robinson, the Miami Duncan Robinson, like just on principle? How did that happen? How did that slip through the scouting?
It's yet another example of how the Spurs have really slipped the last
just
3 years.
Slippage. So, yeah. The reason we're doing this podcast is we thought it would be fun to do our full 1-5 MVP ballots. These are essentially, I mean, it's not set in stone for me until I write it, but this is like I'm writing it in the cement, kind of the cement is drying. 1-5. I think it's pretty safe to say that these are final MVP ballots. Whether the season comes back or not, there are not going to be enough games to sway the MVP race one way or another, even down to the fifth spot. So this is
There's one other piece to this. We're going to be getting the email in the next month or so from the NBA telling us through our ballots. I just think the ship's going to sail in the regular season, I think.
Oh, regular season
by the end of this month.
Over.
Yeah. But remember, there was a stretch where they were like, no, they'll play six more and then go to the playoffs.
No, I'm saying
that's not happening.
The regular season's over. Like maybe they'll play five. I don't know. Like they'll play to get everyone to 70 games as Hollinger has said. I don't know. But the regular season is over in the sense of any number of games that could impact awards or even playoff races is out the window. And that's why, like, I know there are international players on lottery teams who are like, I got to stick around here until like July to maybe play like four games for some team. And like, but I want to go home. Like, that's not fair. So I think
it's not happening.
That's an issue. Okay. So these are basically our final MVP ballots.
And by the way, I think it's more likely that even if they do have the playoffs, it's not 16 teams. I think it could be eight teams and you do like best of threes. If they were going to go down that road they're going to try to limit the amount of people that are involved.
You have to
as much as they can. And you make a good point. Like what a terrible use of doctors and nurses who could actually help people.
I'm not saying it's terrible. I'm saying that there will be a corner of the population who will say, but there's a scenario depending on how the epidemic unfolds where it does look reckless and bad to a certain amount of the population. And the NBA is sort of trying to internalize. Like I know everyone's excited about sports and there will be a huge percentage of the population who doesn't care that there are doctors and nurses there because they're excited to see Giannis against LeBron or whatever it ends up being. Your top eight thing is interesting. That sounds dramatic, like cut half the playoff teams, but like you really can count other than like a five seed and an occasional random six seed that just had a crappy regular season or was injured. Like you can cut the back eight playoff teams and really you don't lose much. You lose mostly teams that are going to get destroyed in the first round or maybe upset one round and then lose in the second round. It's not like you're losing essentially content in the West. You would lose a couple teams. That's it.
I think best case scenario, you could do 12. You could give the top two seeds in each conference first round buys and you just go best two of three with teams 5 through 12 and then you do an eight. I think they at least get rid of the last four. So if you did 12, that allows you to keep the Pacers and the Sixers. It allows you to keep the Thunder and the Rockets. Dallas is really the only good team that gets screwed out of that. But I might be more pessimistic about the doctor nurses thing. I just don't think we have enough medical personnel right now. And if we're using that for a basketball tournament, I don't see how that's the best use of the resources. Now, the world might be totally different on July 1st and we might have flattened this. We might have better equipment. We might be able to do these tests. We also don't know. Could somebody have the corona and not even realize it for a couple of days? Could that not even show up in a test for a couple of days? Could you have it asymptomatic, you're passing it to people and it's not fully registering that you have it yet? That's why there's so many variables to this from a liability standpoint. That's what they're going to care about over all of this. What is the liability to us if we do this? And that's why I think unless something dramatically changes, we're not going to have a playoffs this year. This season's going to end.
Well, then let's do our MVP ballots. 1 to 5. Let's do it. I am going to assume that we have the same 1-2 in the same order, that almost everybody will have the same 1-2, and 90% of it will be in the same order. But just in case, give me your number one and number two.
Yeah, I think it's Giannis, then LeBron. I think LeBron had a chance to catch up if we had an 82-game season. The season ended abruptly. He had real momentum there, and that coming out of that weekend right into the Gobert game, which I think now we can call the Gobert game, right? That's how we're going to remember that day.
We are going to remember it that way.
It's not a slight on him. It's just like we're going to remember that as the Gobert game. We're going to remember the Artest Melee as the Artest Melee. Like there's certain nights and the moment Gobert gets it, everything in the league changes. I think you look at the Giannis year. And as we're getting away from the season now and the impact of watching LeBron and how good the Lakers looked those last couple weeks, now you're just looking at pure stats and stuff. Giannis' season was amazing. He's 30-14-6, 55% shooting. He only played 31 minutes a game. His per 36, he was 34.5, 16-7, which has no correlation to really anything other than like stuff Will Chamberlain did and maybe Kareem. Candidate for defensive player of the year. He's at least in the conversation.
I think he's going to win.
So you got that. You also have the Bucks were 53-12. Their historical stuff slipped a little bit. They finished at 11.2 point differential. They averaged 118.6. They were first in defensive rating. It was a great Bucks season. He was the best player in the team. He had a transcendent season. I don't know how he wouldn't be unanimous. Like if somebody voted for LeBron, I think that would be like just lame.
I guarantee you that there's going to be at least 10, 15 votes for LeBron. There's no question.
But that's irresponsible. It really is. Giannis had the best season. If you're removing all biases and just looking at it objectively, who had the best team? Who was the best player in the team? Who had the best statistical season? Who was the best two-way player? He's the best player in the league. And could LeBron have caught him in the last 6 weeks? Yeah, maybe. But we didn't have the last 6 weeks. So this is done. It's a wrap.
Yeah, I think it's a wrap. Statistically, there's no comparison at all. In fact, Harden is closer statistically to Giannis. I don't think we buy him as the number two MVP guy, but Harden is statistically closer. LeBron's path to the MVP was Giannis injures his knee, misses 2 weeks. Suddenly LeBron, who played 300 more minutes than Giannis as it is, now 2/3 of that is the result of Giannis's team being so good that he's just not playing fourth quarters like regularly. So the minutes advantage appears bigger than it really is. And then the minutes advantage with Giannis injured in this theoretical scenario becomes 600 minutes or some number as the Lakers stranglehold the number one seed, some number where you have to start considering, okay, LeBron has a case. And LeBron was absolutely sensational this season. Just an incredible season. He's now third all-time in the history of the league in minutes, regular season, and playoffs combined. What he has done is ridiculous. He is, I think, still the single most feared player in the NBA. If you ask, who am I worried to face in the playoffs? Who am I worried to game plan against for a 7-game series? I still think LeBron lording over the game, seeing everything, being a threat to do almost anything when his jumper is on, is the most feared guy. But
most feared guy in the last, if you're just talking last 5 minutes of a big game with the crowd really into it, who would you just start your team with? I want this guy in this situation. LeBron is first. And that was the advantage LeBron and Davis had in the playoffs. That's why I really thought they were going to win the title. When basketball slows down, it becomes more physical. You got to start getting calls from the refs and all the things that go into what it takes to win a game four on the road, a game seven at home. They were the best position for it. And he was the guy you would want out of anyone in the league in that situation.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's enough to win MVP. The argument for LeBron that people are going to make is that his team needed him more. And the Lakers were...
I don't agree with that, though. I really don't. I don't agree with that at all. And part of the reason his team needed him more is because he implored them to trade all of their assets for Davis, and they created a two-man team that really relied on those two guys. Like, I don't know. It's like a chicken and egg thing, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't actually stand up to scrutiny. The Lakers were outscored by a little bit with LeBron on the bench, and the Bucks were a positive team with Giannis on the bench, but only by a little bit, +4 per 100 possessions, which is like a strong team. But with Giannis on the floor, it's like +17 per 100 possessions. Their net difference is almost identical. The Lakers are about 12 points better with LeBron. The Bucks are about 12 points better with Giannis. To me, it doesn't matter that the bottom end of that scale is a mediocre Lakers team and a decent Bucks team, because then you're really punishing Giannis and rewarding LeBron for the quality of their teammates. And to me, that's not a persuasive MVP argument. And Giannis taking a decent Bucks team and making them historically great is just as impressive, if not more, as LeBron taking a bad Lakers team and making them really, really good. That all of that sort of team quality, team context stuff is not enough to surmount Giannis' statistical advantages.
And he's a better two-way player. That's the other thing. And you just have more lineup flexibility with him, because he could play the five for you if you really needed it. You could just do all these different things. He was the Swiss Army knife this year, the Swiss Army knife guy this year. I have a lot of respect for all the stuff LeBron did. And I think, you know, you talk about, was that the greatest year 17 season anyone ever had? Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go at the stats, only Kobe, Kareem, Malone, and LeBron even averaged 20 points a game in year 17. Now, I think it's unfair. I was going to do this later. I'll do this now. Kareem is now the most underrated star ever. Even when I did my book in 2009, I was writing, like, I had him as the third best player of all time. And I thought even in 2009, he was becoming underrated. Now it's like, he's not even mentioned when people talk about the best players ever. They just did this ridiculous, who is the best college basketball player vote thing. Did ESPN do that?
I believe we did, yeah.
And Kareem didn't win going away. Kareem's the greatest college basketball player of all time. It's like, it's not even close. Didn't even get to play as a freshman. But when you think, like, he spent all 4 years in college, his career belatedly starts. So his rookie year in the NBA is actually his fifth college pro year, whereas LeBron, his fifth year in the NBA, he's playing Paul Pierce in the 2008 round two in that game seven. Like, he had really, like, put in some real time. Kareem is still able to play 19 years after that. He's the finals MVP in 85, like the 16th year of his career. I think he is the most underrated guy by far of all the superstars. So when I say greatest year 17 season ever, you could argue it might be Kareem anyway, because he had already put the 4 years in college, but just statistically, LeBron, this is the best anyone's done. Weirdly, it wasn't one of his best seasons, just statistically, if you look at all the stuff, like, his assists were way up. But I think 2013 LeBron, you look at that season, statistically, that season's incredible. Oh. What was he shooting? He shot 56.5% that year?
12-13, those two championship years in Miami were just another level of efficiency and
that's the thing. It's the efficiency. And we were working together that year. He was 57%, 41% from three, 60% from the free throw line. That was the rub. But 27-8-7, they won 27 games that year. I think that was the best version of him. I think from a playoff standpoint, 09, when he was basically a one-man show, and what did he put up, like 35, 12, and 12 that year in the Orlando series, all that
39,
stuff.
39-9-9 in the Orlando series. It's just comedy. It's just straight, and a buzzer beater to win a game. And people were like, oh, he's not clutch. I'm like, okay. I mean, what the hell is the guy supposed to do?
And I think the 18 playoff version of him, specifically that riding through the East like he did, and then that game one at Golden State, which we both went to, which is the second best game I've ever seen anyone play. That was probably the peak of him at his, like, just understanding everything powers. So I don't feel like this season, I wouldn't rank it as a top five LeBron season, would you?
I don't, it's not, but I will say, you just said the peak of his understanding. When I watched the Lakers this year, I did see, like, I remember we, early in the season, we were debating, who was the better MVP candidate between Davis and LeBron. And you were trying to make the case for Davis, and I just wasn't having it, because I just remember watching the Lakers this season as just, this guy, yeah, his athleticism maybe isn't quite the same, although he's still a top 10 percentile athlete in the NBA, probably just physically. But like, he is so in command of everything that's happening on the floor that it's almost like casual. It's like, he's like, when he really wants to assert control of the game, like, you're almost scared what it's going to look like, because casual regular season LeBron is already just so far ahead of everyone else on the floor that this, I felt this was one of his best sort of like puppet master, feel the game, read the game, understand my teammates seasons ever. And that's what made it more impressive to me. Just like, the stats are the stats, and they're not as good as peak LeBron, but the eye test to me saw like, this dude is at just the peak of his intellectual basketball powers. And this roster that is a kind of weird roster with, you know, Rondo's the only other kind of traditional ball handler that the team has, and he's kind of wildly unpopular among Lakers fans. It was a great season, but he's not the MVP. Giannis is the MVP.
I thought the last like 6-7 weeks when everybody just gave the MVP to Giannis and LeBron was becoming a little bit of an afterthought, really starting with the All-Star game when he reasserted himself, all the way through when the season stopped. He was unbelievable. And you're right, statistically, maybe not at his peak, but eye test was there. And, you know, that last weekend before everything fell apart, when they laid the smackdown on that Friday and that Sunday against the two teams they needed to beat, and he was the best player on the floor in both of those games. And, you know, I was surprised by how many minutes he was able to play this year and how healthy he stayed. And also how committed he was defensively. I think the Davis thing really rejuvenated him in a lot of ways. I just think he loved playing with somebody who was as good as he was, because that hadn't really happened since Dwayne Wade, that first year they were together when Wade was 95% as good as LeBron was that year. That was the last time he played with somebody that was that good.
And just, no, I mean, he's been unbelievable, and It's been a really fun LeBron season for sure. And
first assist title.
Yeah. And remember last year in the offseason, a lot of us said, you know, one of our hopes for the 19-20 season is after LeBron gets injured, Lakers miss the playoffs, Giannis is the MVP, Kawhi outplays Giannis and stakes his claim, Durant is sort of looming before the injury happens. Like, you know, who's this best player in the league now debate. And a lot of us said, I hope we just get at least one more LeBron. Oh, you forgot? You forgot who's the best player? You forgot about me? You're leaving me out of those debates? I hope we get at least one more of those seasons. And we got it. And it's one of the great treasures of this past NBA year, which has really been, when you think about it, it's just on every level a kind of bad, depressing, upsetting calendar NBA season.
Yeah, but it was an awesome season before it stopped. Like, there were so many great subplots, and that was one of them, that LeBron trying to hold on to his throne and reinventing himself in a lot of ways. And also, you know, it didn't feel like he was a Laker really until about halfway through this season. It still felt like he was just kind of had the jersey on, and it was more like the LeBron team than the Lakers. And I think the Laker fans really started to embrace him as the year went along. I was surprised how athletic and powerful he was still able to be this season, because I kept waiting for slippage with that. And there's been a lot of old games on, and you could even see, like, I was watching some of that 2013 Spurs Heat series, which the amount of talent on that floor, now that we know what Kawhi has turned into,
where
you have him and Duncan and Parker and Ginobili, and then either Green or Diaw, that team is now like really, really, really underrated how great that team was. And then Miami's got Ray Allen still like 90% looking like Ray Allen, plus the Bosh, Wade, LeBron thing. Wade actually was the one that was just not healthy that year. But when you watch LeBron in that game, when they really needed buckets, and he still kind of didn't know how to overpower people especially if he had a mismatch. Like there were moments where in like Parker's guarding him and stuff like that, that in 2020, you remember the famous New Orleans game that was one of the kind of the signature games of this year where Alvin Gentry is like, let's put Jrue Holiday on him. This will work. And LeBron was just so dismissive and kind of offended by it and just completely annihilated him. He couldn't do that 7 years ago. And he really has added that to his game in a way that I didn't think he could.
Back when I was looking up stats, like, cause there were games going on, I believe a LeBron post up, if you included the one pass away shots where he draws help and the next guy shoots, I believe it was essentially the most efficient play in the NBA this year. It was like some comedy level of like 1.3 points per possession, something like imaginary. And you're right. You're right. There were games this year where these teams would try 3, 4, 5 different guys on him, all have different attributes, long guys, stout guys, whatever. And he was just like, it was so easy that it was like, this is ridiculous. Like, what are you supposed to, unless you have Kawhi Leonard on your team or like prime Andre Iguodala, you just can't do anything against them. Anyway, it was a great season. Hats off to LeBron.
He kind of learned that in 2018. That was the year when, and it's even in the Warriors series where he would just be like, I'm getting to the basket. You can try to stay in front of me, but I'm just going to do that weird thing where I turn left, I turn right, I'm backing you down and I'm going to get a layup and you're not going to be able to stop this. You have nobody on your team that is going to be able to stay in front of me. The refs never totally know what to do because it's like, it's never totally an offensive foul. He's so smart, but he makes people go backwards. And how many guys in the history of the league could do that on a post-up play? Like 5?
Even in that Warriors series, you're right. We did see that sort of like, you know, I know my team is not good enough and I'm about to go punch a wall and break my hand and like some stuff is going to happen.
Allegedly.
For that game, he was like, none of you guys, Durant, Draymond, like, this is all cute. You guys can't stop me. Let's get to the interesting part of the ballot, which is now 3-5.
I have one thing on the Bucks because I think this is important.
Are you going to antagonize Milwaukee fans? I really hope so.
Define antagonize.
I mean,
like, make them feel bad?
Yeah, really, anything that's like, other than the Bucks are going to walk to the championship at this point is going to antagonize their fans. So please have at it.
Well, I was thinking, you know, Russell and I were talking about how the only really kind of similarity to this, what happened to the Bucks this year was the 94 Expos in baseball, where the Expos had this young team. I'm sorry, just pretend you know what I'm talking about. They're in Montreal. No, they have all these young guys.
I was a huge baseball fan. Say Salou, Larry Walker, like on that team.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Everything's cresting to that year. And then they have the lockout and it just ends. And then
is young Pedro on that team?
Young Pedro's on that team. Like they're just loaded. Now that's a different scenario than this Bucks team, but you know, as we have talked about and written about a million times, you never know. You never know what your window is. This is why I hated the Harden trade. This is why over and over again we've said over the year.
By the way, 33 minutes and 40 seconds. Whoever had the over 30, we got it.
Have a drink. You never know what your window is, and you never know when it might close. And, you know, you think about that Miami Heat team. We thought those guys were going to stay together for 20 years. They stayed together for 4. So I look at this Bucks thing. I'm like, well, what if this was their one shot? How would we remember it? Then I thought, is there another time this happened in NBA history? Well, we've never had a season end. But I think the closest we can go here is the 99 Heat. So you have this Heat team. Jordan retires. We have a 50-game season. The Heat are the one seed. They go 33-17. That year they have Alonzo's first team All-NBA, arguable MVP. If you do that season over again, he might be in the mix. It's the best Alonzo season. Tim Hardaway's second team. So they have 2 of the top 10 players in the league. They have Jamal Mashburn, who's only, you know, 6-7 years into his career. He's still at his athletic peak. Dan Majerle, his last really good year. PJ Brown on the rise. Terry Porter, veteran Terry Porter. Vashawn Leonard, they have Pat Riley as their coach. They start out 18-5. And the schedule just ends up killing them because they had to play 50 games in 3 months, a little bit of an older team, and they end up getting upset by the Knicks in round one. I think if that's a normal season, I think that's the team that represents the East. And you could argue that might have been the team that, if you look at the roster, the talent they had, it's either them, San Antonio, maybe Portland. The Lakers had Shaq and Kobe at that point. But if you're just telling me if you're playing a whole eight-month year, who wins the title? I would say it was probably the 99 Heat. That was their best chance, got yanked away. And I wonder if with the Bucks, we're going to think of them the same way. So I just want to make that point.
Well, now I'm going to put you on the spot now, because what you just said about windows and championship windows and how precious they are and all that, I think one of the more interesting what-ifs that's going to evolve over time for a long time now is, and the answer looked like it was certainly one thing 2 years ago, and then when the Raptors won the title, the answer to this question looked like it was certainly the other thing. And now the question is, now the answer looks a little blurrier. So Bill Simmons, Celtics fan, are you happy the Celtics didn't trade Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum for Kawhi Leonard, or you can use Jimmy Butler or Paul George, but Kawhi Leonard was the one that was sitting there waiting to be had and ended up being Finals MVP and all that. Did they make a mistake by not going for it when they had a window, or is history actually going to look back and say, you know what, Jaylen Brown is so good that Danny Ainge actually made the right call?
I think it was the right call, because there are two variables with that. One was that we had no idea if Kawhi was actually going to be healthy. And then two, we had no idea if he wanted to stay, and the answer was clearly he would have been 1 year and out. He wins a title in Toronto, he leaves. There's no scenario in Boston where it's more appealing than what happened to him in Toronto. So you're trading Jaylen, who I really believed in at the time. When you look back at what Toronto gave up, and I'm probably way late on this with DeRozan. I always liked DeRozan more than other people. But I think the smarter NBA people all along were like, yeah, DeRozan was overrated. Like, they really didn't give up that much and got out of a really, really unappealing contract, you know? And they get Danny Green in the trade too. Like, that trade was kind of a no-brainer for Toronto because it was able to reset something. In Boston's case, I think they really felt strongly this entire time that they had something special with Tatum and Jaylen together, and that if they could build a team around those two guys for 12 years, that was always going to be the right move. So it's weird. I still kind of defend it. I defend the logic of doubling down on something that might last for a decade versus 1 year and out with, you could say, oh, well, if they knew they'd guaranteed title for Kawhi, all right, maybe you do it. But there was no guarantee at all that he was even going to play 6 months.
As we all know, they needed, is it the greatest shot in NBA history? Certainly the weirdest greatest shot in NBA history, just to get out of the second round. I mean, that's how thin the margins are. And back at the height of it, as Kawhi was winning the championship, a lot of people there was just a lot of noise, like Danny Ainge clearly made a mistake. This is stupid. All the memes and jokes about Danny Ainge hoarding all his young players and draft picks. It's just never that easy. Like, I still think they were probably a little too gun-shy because Kawhi is that good. But, A, you're right. The health thing people forget. People thought, is he just going to be 90% of Kawhi, 85% of Kawhi? And the leaving thing was like, it's not that you didn't know if he was going to stay. It's that you were pretty sure he was not going to stay. And then on the flip side, you get Jaylen Brown, who's never going to be as good as Kawhi. Just, it's not going to happen. Even the biggest Jaylen Brown optimist, he's not going to ever be Kawhi Leonard. But
he could be Paul George.
He could be 80 to 90% of Kawhi Leonard. I don't know. And he's on a rookie deal, which means he's cost controlled for a little bit longer. And then you control his next 4 or 5 years or whatever the deal ends up being. Like, you add up the just bang for the buck value. I don't think it was ever obvious that Danny Ainge was overly cautious. He needed Jaylen Brown to get really good, and Jaylen Brown averaged 20 a game this year and is on the path to being a really good kind of two-way borderline all-star-y kind of player. I just think it was never as black and white as people thought, and it's just going to be fascinating. Okay, MVP. 3, 4, 5. Who's three?
So I did this with Russillo a few weeks ago, and I got to be honest, did not put nearly as much time because if the season had just kind of been paused and it was just like, oh, I wonder who the top five would be. And when I did that time, I had Kawhi third. And I thought I was going to change my mind as I did this again and have somebody else. And I did deep dive on everybody. I still have Kawhi third.
Wow.
He played 51 of 64 games. The Clippers were 38-13 when he played. His per 36 was 38-6. He was 27-7-5 for the year, 47-37-89% percentages, almost two steals. Eye test, he was one of the best four players I saw all season. I thought he had a dramatic effect just on the change of the Clippers into a team now that seemed like they could realistically be a finals team. And in big games, you talk about like those moments where it's like there's 5 minutes left. Who do I want out there? Who should be getting the ball? Who do I feel the most comfortable with? I just have him over everybody else. I still feel like it matters that he won the title the year before and that he kind of protected that corner in a lot of ways. So, you know, you throw in the defense, which is still top three, right? He's still one of the three best defensive players in the league.
When he wants to be.
For perimeter?
Perimeter, just zeroing in on perimeter defenders. I would think so that he's in the top.
Yeah.
Three. Yeah.
So I have him third. I knew that you wouldn't, but I just feel like nobody bumped him out of that. And, you know, it matters to me. The records matter. I'm sorry. Like the Clippers were the two seed.
Then we're really going to disagree on one.
Yeah,
of
we
choices.
Are.
One of my choices, so I have Kawhi on my ballot. Last thing on that though.
I think there were three teams that could have won the title. It was one of the three. So I felt like if I'm going to have a top three MVP, I have to start with, can I have somebody from all three of those teams and if it's crazy to do that, then fine. But I didn't feel like it was crazy when I looked at everybody else, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, so let's zoom out for a second. Cause I have Kawhi on my ballot. I have him on my ballot despite the fact that he played 600 fewer minutes than James Harden and 500 fewer minutes, fewer than a number of candidates. And I think that matters, but I have him on my ballot anyway, not at third, but just because of essentially what you just said. I have Kawhi fifth. Okay. And it came down to Kawhi. And when you hear who I left off, you're going to see that these are really hard decisions, but I just did have this moment of like, who do I think is the best out of these guys? It's Kawhi. Like, of these guys are in battle for my fifth spot. Like, okay, shove aside minutes and this and that. Who's the best guy when the game's on the line? And it's Kawhi. So I agree he belongs on the ballot despite playing the fewest minutes of all the major candidates. Now, can we zoom out for a second?
No, I think to do this, to build drama.
Yes.
I think now you have to say who you had third.
Okay. I will say that, but I'll go this. Let me zoom out first. You know me, I'm a completist, right? So I'm going to consider way too many people as worthy of the five spot. I'm going to start with a list of like 25 dudes and whittle it down. So like Jimmy Butler gets a look for 2 seconds and Ben Simmons gets a look for 2 seconds and blah, blah, blah.
To me,
there are eight candidates.
That's what I had.
So we got to have the same eight guys then, right?
Yeah.
So obviously we've already named Giannis, LeBron, Kawhi.
No, build the drama.
I was going to name all eight. No?
Don't do it. Okay. No.
Okay.
No, build the drama.
Okay. So my third guy is James Harden. And statistically, I think the last month of James Harden, I can see you smirking. See, I can see you on the video. You're ready. You're ready to hammer him. I'm very excited for what's going to happen. The last month of his season when he slumped a little bit statistically and Russ catapulted up statistically, I think is going to color people's perception because of the recency of it. And maybe people are going to forget how brilliant he was for the first 3 months of the season. Statistically, I don't even need to read the numbers. They're absolutely overwhelming. He leads the league in win shares. He's second in PER. He leads the league in X, Y, and Z and Vorps and Storps and Dorps. The guy is an unbelievable statistical season. Is oftentimes still comatose on defense. I get it. You're going to tell me you don't trust him as a leader in a big spot. I get it. For regular season MVP and what he does to carry that team every single night, and he is carrying them because the numbers are still, even when Russ was going crazy, the numbers are still Houston really good with Harden and Russ, Houston really good with Harden alone, Houston not good, actually bad with Russ alone. Harden is the thing that makes that team go. Harden is a top five NBA offense by himself because of the step back three. So I'm awaiting your vehement opposition to this, but to me, James Harden is the clear number three guy in the MVP race.
Didn't have him in my top five.
Oh yes! Oh, that this is the most. I can't. This is the most exciting. This is very exciting for me. I can't tell me why, Bill.
There was real thought put into this too.
I know you went whole hog on this. You went deep diving. You did the work.
First of all, they were a six seed when the season ended. So from that point alone,
finished with a whimper.
From that point alone, if you're not one of the top four seeds and you want me to consider you as a top three, you had to have been amazing and you had to have just completely carried your team. So he finishes at 34-6-7.
Woo.
You made it seem like he slumped a little bit.
No, he slumped
near the end. His last 27 games, they only played 64. So we're talking 45% of the season, basically. He's 29-7-7, 39% shooting, 30% from three.
How many free throws?
Same. He's in the, 11 threes, 11,
so,
whatever.
So with Harden more than any player in the league, the raw shooting percentages are going, when he's shooting 39%, are going to underplay how devastating he still is.
Listen, I know it's slipping away for you, but you got to let me finish my case. I know you're racked with regret right now. Houston was second in offense. That's great.
That's
for
good.
Offensive efficiency, whatever. Russell Westbrook was their best player for the last 2 months of the season. That is an unassailable opinion. He was. Last 22 games for Westbrook, 32-8-7, 53% field goal. Eye test. He was the guy they went to at the end of the games. I'm going to put Harden as my number three MVP when for 35 to 40% of the season, he clearly was the second best player on his team and wasn't playing well and looks sluggish and can't guard anybody. And I don't know. Yet, I just don't like the way he played. I can't do it.
And yet, for the season, the Rockets are even with Westbrook and no Harden and minus four per 100 possessions, minus 3.5 actually, since they mothballed Capella and went super small with Westbrook and no Harden. Part of the reason Westbrook was so good is because Harden starts every possession with the ball and two guys come to him at half court and he passes and lets the other guys do all the work.
That's fair. I'm factoring one more thing, and this isn't necessarily fair for MVP, but I, as you know, I put a lot of thought into MVP and what it means.
Yes,
and I think sometimes I'll have somebody third in MVP who wasn't first team all NBA. Harden has been running the Rockets for like a year. Everything that's happened to them is a decision that he's either blessed or probably pushed for. Let's be honest. Let's put all the f***ing cards on the table. Everything is geared toward everything revolving around him. Is it a way that you could win the title? I mean, it seemed like it for 2 weeks when they got rid of Capella and they did their whole spread the floor thing. But as this season was abruptly ending, people kind of had figured out the Rockets thing. It didn't seem like it was sustainable. They couldn't do it defensively. And it worked for 2.5 weeks. I thought they were heading toward a huge tailspin. And if you're just talking about teams that were kind of saved by the abrupt end of the season for how it would have played out next 6 weeks, they're at the top of the line to me. The green arrow was pointing down, not up for Harden. And look, I just think we had a lot of MVP candidates and a lot of good players this year. So this isn't a slight to him that I don't have him third. I probably had him sixth. I really liked the other candidates more. I thought they were more valuable and more consistent, and that's it. That's it right there.
That is true. There are several really good, there are eight really good MVP candidates, and for drama purposes, we're not naming them. I just think Harden is such a dominant offensive player that he's an offense unto himself. So, okay, 1-3, Simmons has Giannis, LeBron, Kawhi. Lowe has Giannis, LeBron, Harden. We're 100% going to disagree on number four. Are you ready to go to number four?
Yeah, I do. I wanted to make one point, though. So we're all quarantined right now.
Yes.
If your wife is refusing to let you shop, cook, do anything, you're just out completely, and she's doing every meal, and you're standing in the corner. You're allowed to clean up. That's it.
Is this an advertisement for something? Are you doing a native ad on my pun?
No. She's doing everything. It's all running through her. It's her choice. And her performance starts to slip in weeks 3, 4, 5 because this is the way I want it. We have to do it this way. Do you get blamed for that? Because I feel like this is the way the Rockets played out this year was what James Harden wanted. He wanted this huge responsibility. He wanted the ball all the time. And then it wasn't working. And they're like, you know what we'll do? We'll trade our center. Now we'll even do this on steroids. And his performance slipped. It started to go down. And I think it was going to continue to go down. So anyway, I have him.
I thought you were literally going to be like, is your wife doing all the work? Is she cooking and cleaning?
No, that's another topic.
Try 1-800-Flowers.com. It's a really good, that's where I thought you were going. Are you ready to review?
So my number four, you're not going to like it. Again, I look at MVP like if I just take this person off the roster, what happens? Also, who else do they have? I loved what Jokic was doing, and especially the last 2 months. And I look at Denver's record, which was 43-22.
You're Denver, you're lionizing their record. In Houston, you are lamenting their sixth seed status. I believe they're separated by 2 games in the loss column.
They're separated by 3 wins. The difference is, who is the second best player on Denver this year?
For most, start to finish, probably Will Barton, honestly.
That's why I'm picking Nikola Jokic number four. He had, even Dallas, and I think the supporting casts are a little similar where like really relied on one person offensively in a lot of ways. Porzingis at least got going the last 2 months of the season and would have, and it was weird. It was a lot of times when Luka wasn't there, but at least Porzingis is somebody that could score 37 in a game or have a game where he could kind of carry the load or do something or get hot or make 7 threes. They would have these random Tim Hardaway games. I thought Denver's supporting cast was so disappointing this year because I thought Jamal Murray was going to make a leap. He was kind of the same guy he was last year. I don't know what happened to Gary Harris. I really don't. He just became kind of borderline unplayable, and I felt like they kind of stuck with it. And the fact that they were leaning on Will Barton that much was really weird to me. But Jokic, he played 65 games, which I think matters. He was really reliable from a health standpoint. 20-10-7, 53% shooting. His last like 2 months was kind of unstoppable.
Yeah, unstoppable.
And everything they were doing was rolling through them. I thought that was a team that was actually getting better, not worse. And I just liked how he played, and I think it matters that he didn't have the talent. So I had him fourth.
I thought a lot about the supporting cast thing, but mostly because of Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis is going to get hammered for how bad the Lakers were when LeBron was on the bench and Davis was on the floor. In fact, I think that's the reason he's probably not going to make the final ballot when all the votes are in. And then you start thinking about it, though. And I didn't think about it much with Jokic because I love Jokic. Jokic is maybe my favorite player to watch in the whole league. But, you know, you talked about it with Luka. I actually think Luka and Kawhi are similar in that they do benefit from great depth and great benches. Their teams are good in some part because, like, Dallas's bench was sensational until injuries started to chip away at it with Brunson getting hurt and a couple other guys getting hurt. And Kawhi, the Clippers may have the best bench in the whole league, certainly the highest scoring bench in the whole league. And then Anthony Davis, who's going to get punished for what I just said, it's really a team because of the lack of ball handling that is really built for LeBron and not built for Anthony Davis. And now you can say, well, Anthony Davis is, if he wants to be an MVP candidate, he's supposed to transcend team construction and all of that. But when Anthony Davis is playing without LeBron, they're so bereft of offensive creation from the perimeter that I think I'm not sure it's fair to hold those numbers against Davis to the degree that people will. That said, Anthony Davis did not make my ballot.
He didn't make mine either. And I want to piggyback on that for 1 second. If you're Davis and you have a team that literally doesn't have a point guard other than LeBron, has not one player in the team that can create a shot for you, except for Rondo, who's unplayable. Yeah, his numbers are going to go down when LeBron's out of the lineup. Like, even if they had year 17 Andre Miller on that team, who could at least, like, throw him an entry pass and whatever, you know, Rondo was his best chance. And again, I thought Rondo was unplayable. I don't hold that against Davis. Davis came very close to making my ballot.
Mine too. He's one of the eight. You're not going to like my fourth choice. You're not going
to like your third choice, I'll tell you that much.
But I know you're not going to like my fourth one. I'm glad that we're having arguments here. So you mentioned you really prioritize team record. That's why you're going to hate this choice. Can you guess who I'm talking about yet?
No.
Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard fourth.
I'm speechless.
Silence.
I didn't even have him in my eight.
Wow. I think Dame had a slept-on sensational season that is statistically just a couple of rebounds a game different than Doncic's in terms of all-around numbers. 29 and 8 on 40% shooting from three on 10 threes a game. He had one of the greatest stretches that we've ever seen in, like, the modern history of the NBA when he went berserk for a couple of weeks. Again, 29 and 8, 40% shooting. The Blazers, with all of their injuries, right, their whole front line is injured, are absolute roadkill without him. He's one of the great culture setters in the NBA. And at some point, I just have to I have to reward him for he played 500 more minutes than Kawhi and 300 plus more minutes than Luka. And just the sheer amount of, like, on-court availability, I think, and his obvious value to the Blazers, I wanted to reward him for his minutes and his availability. Statistically, he's neck and neck. If you look at all the advanced numbers, he's neck and neck with Luka and Kawhi and Jokic. Like, they're all around in the same boat. And so I just said, look at the minutes. The guy's on the court for 400, 300, 500 more minutes. This is X amount of games. I'm going to reward him and pencil him in, or wet cement him in. Damian Lillard is fourth on my MVP ballot, despite the fact that the Blazers, yes, are 29 and 37. They were better. They were 2-6 when he was injured. So they were 27 and 31 with him. They have a positive scoring margin when he's on the floor. Considering their injuries, I do believe that it's possible to be a top five MVP player, not top three maybe, but four and five on a team that's mediocre. So I put Damian Lillard, and you're going to lambaste me on my own podcast, and I'm fine with that. I feel comfortable with my choice.
Nah, I just think you've been quarantined too long.
Fair. It's been a long time. It has not been that long, because considering how long this is going to go on. So
true. I think you're confusing, if I can critique your pick.
Critique it.
We have the all-NBA team to reward Damian Lillard's season.
Would you put him MVP? Would you put him first team all-NBA above Harden or Luka as a guard?
I mean, I had him second team, but I think it's a good discussion. I just feel like, first of all, you can't be a top five MVP if your team's below 500 when we have a lot of candidates.
I respect the
that's
bright
just
line
a, it's just my personal philosophy.
I respect
it's
it.
Like, all right, well, they were 8 games .500 with him, so who cares at that point? But I think he was one of the top.
Their team was really bad. The rest of the roster,
yeah,
is really
I get
bad.
It.
It's really bad.
But we have precedence for this with different people, right? Like Paul Pierce in 2006, his best season. He was awesome. He was one of the best six players in the league that year, but the team sucked. So, you know, he ended up second team All-NBA. But I thought he was incredible that season. I thought he was an MVP candidate, but he wasn't, because you couldn't, you can't be when your team's not good. So I get it. I see what you're trying to do.
I actually sort of, I'm going to go the opposite way of you. If I keep my MVP ballot this way, so Dame is obviously finished ahead of Doncic for me, I'm going to go the other way for all NBA and put Doncic on first team along with Harden, because I just think Doncic per minute was a little bit better than Lillard, and certainly sort of a more just, you know it when you see it, kind of superlative playmaker sort of guy. But the minutes advantage for Dame is so enormous, and so much of regular season value is just literally being on the court. He led the league in minutes per game. He's an Iron Man, so I just wanted to reward him for that. I don't feel particularly passionate about it, but I'm putting him in there, and I'd go the other way for all NBA. So we now differ on
Paul,
three. So
Paul Pierce, by the way, didn't make any all NBA team in 06, which is ludicrous.
Well, he had a reputation then, right? I mean, he was not considered a
but
leader.
But he in 06, he shed it, though. The team was just terrible. The Luka thing, so he was my fifth spot guy.
He was my hardest cut. I've already said I had Kawhi fifth, and Luka was my most painful cut.
So case for Luka, and this is why I had him over Harden, because I felt pretty good about my order, and this spot was either Luka or Harden. I took a long look at Davis. We could talk about him in a second, but Luka was 29.99. All his percentages and all that stuff was really good. I think the per 36 we have to mention, because he was only playing like 32 minutes a game, something like that. His per 36 was 31.10.9. And you look at Harden's per 36, because Harden was playing more minutes. He was like 33. So the per 36 was like pretty similar.
And Dame, to your point, Dame's per 36 is almost exactly what his stat line is, because he's playing 36 and a half minutes a game.
Well, and some key minutes there, down 15, getting killed by teams when he's putting up threes. I'd like to see his numbers when they were down 10.
I bet they were good. I bet they were good. He brings them back in these games in the fourth quarter out of nowhere.
Dallas was first in offense, which if you just look at their rosters, if you looked at the rosters of everyone on the team knowing nothing, like you had amnesia, you had amnesia for 3 years and you woke up, and then I just presented you the rosters of each team, and I was like, who do you think was first on offense this year? Dallas would not have been your pick.
No.
They were just really efficient and smart, and he was doing a lot of the same stuff Harden was doing, but doing smarter, more efficient versions of it and getting his teammates a little more involved, to be honest. The Mavs were 40-27. They were 6-7 without him. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention, like one of the great second year seasons anyone's ever had, you know, certainly better than LeBron's second season. It's up there with Larry Bird's second season and Chamberlain and people like that. I think I had five guys who averaged a 25-5-5 in year two. The other three were Oscar, LeBron, and Jerry West. And that team was good. And it was, you know, I think it was a playoff fringe contender. I don't think they would have been one of my first choices, but I think in a series, I think they could have gone after anyone. So I have him fingernail edge over Harden just because of the way Harden ended the last 27 games.
Look, again, Luka was my most painful omission, but by any statistical measure, I don't know that anyone has put up numbers like that and not made a top five MVP ballot. I mean, his numbers are ludicrous.
Who'd you have for five then?
Kawhi.
Oh yeah, that's right. Okay. Dame Lillard. You really threw a chainsaw in the hot tub with that one.
I love Dame Lillard. My eight guys that I thought were all worthy of being in the discussion are Giannis, LeBron, Harden, Lillard, Kawhi, and then the three that didn't make my ballot are Jokic, Davis, and Doncic. I think those were the eight. Some people in the league would make an argument for maybe Gobert. I don't buy it. I'll tell you who has a good case. Chris Paul. I took a long look at Chris Paul. His numbers are the per game numbers don't jump out. Like it's 18-8. The advanced numbers are off the charts, and his crunch time numbers are like you just like you're playing NBA Jam with Chris Mullin and the ball is on fire. It's ridiculous.
So I had him. He was one of my eight.
I think that's completely reasonable. That's how good Chris Paul was.
I had Giannis, LeBron, Kawhi, Jokic, Doncic, Harden, and Anthony Davis seventh. And weirdly felt bad about it. There was 5 minutes where I was trying to cram him into the top five because I do feel like he's one of the top five players in the league. But and his stats were, 27-9, all that stuff. I had Chris Paul seventh. You know,
I buy it.
He played 63 games, which I was impressed by. The big thing for me, I always love to look at a little stat called wins. And OKC was 40-24. How the f*** did that happen? They had five players. And three of them were guards.
Three of them were point guards, basically.
They had three point guards, Steven Adams and Gallinari. Their swing guys were the worst in the league. Honestly, they had the worst perimeter guys in the entire league. It didn't matter. And in the end of games, he became like a cheat code. Over and over again, he could just get whatever basket he wanted. On defense, he's just taking the ball from people. I was so impressed by him. You know, there were rumors about the Knicks maybe going after him this summer. Who knows if we even have a summer or what the future looks like and all that stuff. I think Chris Paul at that salary from what we saw this year actually is not as daunting as it seemed like it was last September because he clearly, unequivocally changed the culture of that team. That team was headed, I think the Vegas over-under was like 32 wins for them. They passed it and we had a shortened season.
And they started off, they were like 500 after X amount of games. I mean, I haven't looked it up in a while, but their record since then was like, oh my God. I totally agree. Like, I thought hard about Chris. I think it was one of the best stories of the season. He was fantastic. I think he's going to make an all-NBA team, which if you had said that before the season, is Chris Paul going to be one of the six all-NBA guards? Now, did it help that Steph Curry vaporized one? You know, that's the spot that opens up but I think that's an extraordinary accomplishment, and I think he's a perfectly reasonable candidate.
Well, you think of sometimes this happens where spots get too loaded. There's six guard spots for the three All-NBA teams. Do you think LeBron's a guard?
No, LeBron's going to be listed as a forward. I'm sure. I mean, he almost always is. I just think he's a LeBron. Like he's a whatever.
He was their point guard. You know, that's where it gets a little dicey. Like if you're able to put LeBron at guard, then you can have a first team All NBA of either Jokic or Davis, Giannis, Kawhi, LeBron, and Harden. If LeBron is a forward, that gets a lot more complicated. Now you have to bump Kawhi out.
Yep.
But from a guard standpoint, I had Lillard second team. I thought CP3 unequivocally was third team. And
I think he might be second team, actually.
Yeah. If everybody moves up, you're right. Because if LeBron is a forward, then it becomes Harden and Doncic or Harden and Lillard, however that plays out.
I mean, you start to think, what guard are you taking over Chris Paul other than Harden?
Westbrook's the only one.
No, it's a no. Trae Young, no. Kemba, no. Russ, to me, no. Simmons, I don't think so. But
you
Simmons,
sure you want to dismiss Westbrook?
Yes.
I had him ninth on my ballot.
He had a great season. I'm taking Chris over him for all NBA.
That as well.
Devin Booker, no. Mitchell, no. Beal ended up averaging 30.5 points a game.
Now,
that's ridiculous.
What about Lowry?
Lowry's in there too. Yeah. Lowry, I was going to ask you, who's the better Raptor MVP candidate, Lowry or Siakam? I mean, neither is going to finish in the top 10, I don't think, but
I think Lowry has a case for the 9-10 range potentially just because,
he might.
Look, I thought from an MVP, what he means to a team standpoint, I thought he was the MVP of that team. The passion that he played with, his competitiveness game to game. All coming off that, like, you know, I think we've talked about this before, but when you talk about just single games where somebody's career completely changed, that last game for Lowry in the finals completely changes the narrative about his career. It changes how he plays the following season. This guy that seemed like he was available for like 4 years in a trade, and now it would feel weird if he didn't finish his career with the Raptors. Or at least like hit the prime of his career. I would have, if I'm doing all NBA and LeBron is a forward, I would have Harden and Doncic as my guards and Lillard and CP3 second team, and then probably Lowry and Westbrook third team.
So no, okay. That's totally fair. I don't mind it. I mean, there's,
what would you do for the centers though? Would you have Jokic or Davis? Because I would have Jokic for first team all NBA.
See, I think Davis, I think the fair thing to do is use Davis as a forward. He played like 70% of his minutes at forward. He made a big deal out of like, we got to construct our whole team. We got to play these centers 35 minutes a game so I don't have to play center. I think I don't know what positional flexibility the league will build in, but I think the fair thing to do is list Davis as a forward, which complicates the center position, because then you have Jokic, I think, is a no-brainer first team All-NBA center at that point if it's not Davis. And then you just got a bunch of guys, and it's like they're all good. Embiid is the best of them, but Embiid missed 20 games.
No, he can't be in there.
And wasn't, I think there was a period of 15-ish games where he just kind of didn't look as engaged and Embiid-y as he normally. So you're just out on Embiid as an All-NBA candidate.
If you're forcing Davis to be a forward, which I don't agree with, because I think it solves a lot of problems if he's a center. But if he's a forward, then you have, and LeBron's a forward, which now you'd have Giannis, LeBron first team. You'd have Davis and Kawhi second team.
Second team.
I just don't like it as much. I also feel like, how can Davis and LeBron be forwards when Kuzma and Danny Green and all these other guys also played a ton of minutes at forward? Like, at some point, we can get a little cute and put Davis at center to solve some issues.
If they let us do it, I mean, the NBA controls that. If they let you do it, then I am all for just like, let's try to get the 15 best guys on.
Yeah, let's try to represent the best 15. But if we can't for some reason, I'd probably have Bam Adebayo second team.
Bam's got a case. Bam,
because look at that! Look at that Miami team. Where did they end up at? They were at 41-24. Yeah, and then I would have Sabonis third team.
So no Gobert
over Embiid.
No Gobert.
I watched too many games this year with the Jazz with Gobert, where I was just like, what is this?
Where 15-14 on 70% shooting, and he might be the best defensive player in the league. It's a good case. It's a good case. I don't necessarily disagree with you, though, that having watched peak Rudy Gobert now for a long time, I did come away from a lot of Utah games this season. Part of this was the vibe of their team, but I feeling something is like 5% off, like with Rudy. Something's 5% off, and he's not the kind of player who can take a 5% decline and have the same kind of impact. Like, he's just, it's like when Draymond Green loses half a step, it's going to be devastating to his career. It's like some people can lose. Now, I'm not saying Rudy lost half a step. I'm just saying something wasn't quite right. So I don't disagree that Bam, 16-11-5 on 57% shooting, really good defense. Like, that's a perfect, I don't hate it.
Who do you have as the Miami MVP between Butler and Bam? Because I would say Bam.
I still, although Butler played more games, I still think Jimmy as the guy who, when it's crunch time and who's going to actually create a bucket for me or get to the line or like.
Do you see the stats for him in that situation? They're like appalling.
But who else is doing it for me on that team? And his numbers this year overall. Are the shooting is down, but the free throws and the shot creation, the assists are way up. So I as much as I love Bam, I'd still say Jimmy.
If we asked Spoelstra if he came in right now to this Zoom, like which guy could you have not survived without? There's no way he doesn't say Bam.
No,
they could have patched it together without Jimmy for 2 months, but not Bam.
But you know what though? Coaches will always answer that question by thinking which player is going to be most offended by not being the answer to this question, and how can I keep my locker room happy? So it's like when Steve Kerr said KD was the second best player in the league over Steph. I mean, part of that had to have been because he knows Steph is like, fine, whatever you say, whatever you want. I don't care. I'm in KD maybe is not quite wired that way. Just maybe not.
Definitely not. By the way, with the Butler thing, kudos to him for finally being on a happy team. What an odyssey. It took 10 years.
Miami is a different kind of place.
They actually liked their roster and their chemistry, and the team looked out for each other and stuck up for each other. It was people including me thought he wasn't capable of that.
What made you, before I let you go, what made you most angry in the Ringer TV character bracket? What seeding or what result made you most angry?
I actually did not look at the bracket because I knew it was going to make me too angry, because we have a lot of young people that work for us and they tend to value all the TV from the last 10 years. Like, as soon as they told me there was only one Wire character in the bracket, I was like, I'm not looking at this.
Omar,
I'm out.
That's it. Stringer Bell didn't make the bracket.
At that point, what are we doing? So look, we learned this with, obviously I'm older than a lot of the people that work for the Ringer. At some point it's like, all right, you do your thing. I'm just going to be over here. I'm glad we did it, but I think it's a list geared toward 30 and under people, and it throws away a lot of good TV that happened in 2000. Like, The West Wing was the most important show on television for 5 years. Lost was the most relevant show for 5 years. Like, if you're to actually do a century bracket like that, it can't be skewed toward this decade. So I stayed away from it. I let the kids have their fun.
Cartman was seeded, was a 15 seed, and there was a lot of rage on TheRinger.com that Cartman upset Fleabag in the first round and went on.
But think about how dumb that is. Fleabag, talk about recency bias. That show had 16 episodes. Like, Fleabag being a 2 seed over, I don't know, anyone from Lost that was the most signature show of basically the second half of last decade. That was why I stayed away.
I love Fleabag. I thought Fleabag was unbelievable.
It was great.
My point was, your staff underseeded Cartman and underestimated how popular Cartman was going to be in the tournament.
You're saying my staff valued a show that had 16 episodes over the most iconic cartoon other than The Simpsons in the history of TV?
I'll say this. I was having a text chain with one of my best friends, inspired by something else, that inspired by you and Rosillo on The Karate Kid. We were talking about what movie made us just laugh the hardest. Like, what is the hardest you've ever laughed in a movie? And the first time I saw the South Park movie, and they start singing Uncle F***er in the theater, I don't think I've ever laughed harder at anything in my entire life than that. I think that's the most I've ever laughed at anything in a movie.
I think mine is Naked Gun.
Naked Gun is a top five all-time comedy.
When they did the baseball, the blooper scene on the scoreboard, and the guy got eaten by a tiger, I was just like keeled over.
That was Naked Gun is in the conversation.
Naked Gun is just laughs galore. And I don't know why it hasn't aged well with the younger generation. It's not considered an iconic comedy, and it's weird.
This guy and I were going for our best comedies ever, and Naked Gun was on my list. But that I think that's the hardest I've ever laughed at a movie. Is the moment when they begin singing Uncle F***er and I realize what this movie is going to be. That was the hardest. So I respect Cartman. All right, Bill, you got to go. We are going to reconvene fairly soon for some draft stuff. I look forward to that. I just did 10 minutes of advertising for The Ringer, so go to The Ringer and read all that stuff.
Think about how mad I probably was at half of the bracket.
Now I'm going to go when look go back there. And see. I'm going to start emailing you random things like, this person was seated here, this person
I just
was
think we
there.
Should have done the 2010s, because if we're going to do this century, both decades should be weighed equally. It shouldn't, like, Fleabag being number two. Like, what is that?
Two seed.
I love Fleabag. I thought it was an awesome show, but if great. We're talking, like, iconic impact and stuff, come on.
We'll reconvene soon. Go read your own Ringer TV bracket. Bill Simmons, everybody, thanks for joining.
All right, stay safe, Zach. Stay safe, everyone out there. Listen to your doctors and your scientists, and don't try to outthink people.